Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon in person. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good, man. We said before we started recording, this is going to feel weird, because after 40 episodes of Always Cheating, this is the first time we've ever recorded in the same room live together.
That's true. I mean, this is, you know, many, many years ago in the advent of podcasting, very early days, right? 2007?
Sure.
Pretty early days, at least. I mean, this is like when Ricky Gervais...
When man first invented computer.
So certainly when Ricky Gervais was like at the top of the podcast charts. With Carl Pilkington, you know, back in 2007.
Head like an orange.
So the big kind of podcasts then were like just two guys talking. Be like just two people talking about whatever. And like that was enough for a podcast.
So can I tell the story then of how Always Cheating came to be?
Yeah.
You and I, we recorded a two guys talking podcast. And we were young and single in New York City. There was so much going on.
I was young.
Yeah, I was just getting into my old man phase of life. But it got to the point years on where we coupled off. We became happy. We didn't have anything to complain about. We started seeing fewer movies.
That's true.
So we'd get together to do our two guys podcast. But before we would sit down to actually record it, all we'd want to do is talk about the EPL and our fantasy teams. Lo, here we are, recording Always Cheating for all of you fine people.
That's right. So here we are. We're in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And
Josh, your apartment is beautiful.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And you're in the nursery. Which you helped paint, in fact.
This better not break up the podcast. We're going to survive this, baby.
That's right. So we have kind of one general theme for today's podcast. It's our top 10 tips for fantasy Premier League success and mental stability, which really go hand in hand, because it is a very, very long season. And having the mental fortitude to get through the season is almost as important as having the right strategy.
Yeah. I think a lot of people listening out there, you are longtime players of the game, but we're sort of opening the door for new players of the FPL. Additionally, for guys like me, it's good going into a new season to just be reminded of how to be mindful and also how to, I'm focusing on the mental stability part of this list.
Yeah, exactly. If nothing else, the mental tips we have in here after many years of therapy should be useful for the long season ahead. Just one quick bit of house cleaning. We talked about this on the last podcast, and a few people have responded on Facebook or Twitter to say that they're interested in joining the Hail Cheaters head-to-head league. We decided to start one. We're just going to do a small league because I think it's...
The word is exclusive, Josh, not small.
An exclusive league of 36 players, and really that's more like 34 because that includes the two of us. And about 10 people have actually already responded to say they want to be part of the league. So we're down to 24. So if you want to join the head-to-head league, the idea is that it's going to be 36 people, which means you're going to play everybody once over the course of 35 weeks. And then we're going to have three knockout rounds, quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. And we're going to come up with some sort of small prize for the winner of the league as well.
So small prize.
Small prize. it could be as much as an email congratulating them. That small. I don't want it to be...
The winner will be made to review us on our iTunes page.
Exactly. I don't want this because I don't want this to be something that the Hail Cheater Super League is the League of Leagues, right?
It is the League of Leagues. So what are we going to call this? Should we call it the Hail Cheaters Extremely Super?
I have like an acronym right now. It's like the HC Super Secret H2H League. It's on the down low.
I think we should solicit for league name ideas from our Twitter friends.
That's good. Yeah. So we have kind of two different themes right now. There's the Great British Bake Off themes, and there's also the presidential memoirs puns, you know? Okay. So we'll have to... Yeah, it takes an Aston Villa to raise a family.
I like it. Yep. I mean, that family would really not be a family I would want to hang out with if it were raised by Aston Villa.
No, it's really...
modern day Aston Villa, maybe.
This is true. Yeah, exactly. An Inconvenient Hooth, our friend Dave Wegner Lodell said on Twitter earlier today. So, if you're interested, email us you can email us if you want. It's hailcheaters@gmail.com. But you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter is @hailcheaters, and Facebook is facebook.com/alwayscheating.
You said it right, Josh.
All right, for once. We almost always have to edit that out because I say it the wrong way. All right, so it's fun to record. And I feel like I'm talking a little bit louder than usual. Just there's something about like I feel like I'm performing, you know, with the.
Well, there's a little bit like we're sort of in studio, and even though we don't have like the big cans on, the big headphones on, there's something a little more formal about
it. Is
usually when we're recording this podcast, we're via Skype, and I can just sort of like my mind can wander off, and I can start looking around the room. I can
checking baseball scores.
My cat, play with my cat a little bit while Josh is off on one of his tangents about Arsenal or something like that.
Right. So I will say, and people are actually surprised sometimes to find out that we record every episode on Skype. But I defy you to record every single week an in-person podcast. It is almost impossible.
Yeah.
These things always take longer than you think. A 90-minute podcast is always like 6 hours in my experience.
Sure. I mean, if you're James Richardson with the
AC Jimbo.
AC Jimbo with the Guardian Football Weekly, like podcasting guru and high-tech stuff at your disposal. And you can just record the track, get up, walk away, and then it's done. this is a real mom and pop shop, and I think I'm the pop. I think you're the mom, Josh.
I don't think so. No, I think I'm the wacky uncle.
I have one last bit of housekeeping myself. So we ran through the head-to-head league. We have one error that we need to correct from last week's episode. It was perhaps the first episode in 30 episodes where we didn't mention Kwadwo Poku. Former player for NYCFC, our favorite player for NYCFC, who was recently traded to Miami, of all places. And not David Beckham's Miami.
Now, if you're going to mention the two giants of the Always Cheating Fantasy podcast, I think we should also mention that Dea Mercy Mbakani has been linked to West Bromwich Albion.
Mm. Are you serious?
I am serious. Now, if that happened, I mean, they are, you know, we die. I don't want this to be like a West Brom corner every week where we just bash West Brom.
Nobody else is talking about West Brom. Josh.
I am so frustrated with Arsenal right now that I might be willing to become a West Brom fan if they acquire Mbakani.
You suddenly become a big fish in a small pond.
That is true.
I feel like last week we put the call out for, are there any West Brom fans out
there? No one picked up the call.
Crickets chirping.
I know. I might be the only fan in America, that's for sure. You never see their weird Foot Locker jerseys in America. all right, so should we get right into...
I want to come full circle on that Mbakani link, because I actually love the idea of Dea Mercy Mbakani going to West Brom, because our hashtag Free Mbakani could still live on, because even if he is part of the starting 11 at West Brom, because, come on, he's one of the greatest strikers to play the game.
In history.
But you would not wish for any top-flight player to end up at West Brom, so we would still wish for him to be freed.
So you don't think that James Morrison is a top flight player? My God, Brandon.
I mean,
You're tough.
Let the Twitter trolls have a field day with that one. Yeah.
Saito Berahino?
I mean, I'm more of a James Brunt fan myself.
Now, Brunty...
Chris Brunt.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking of James Blunt, the great singer-songwriter.
I feel like it's impossible to rate Saito Berahino. It's so hard to tell if he's any good or not.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely fall on the... not a fan.
All right, let's get right to it, Brandon. Okay. Enough very small talk here. These are our we've done this together. We've come together as a unit. Fair amount of argument, I will say. Quite a bit of back and forth on these.
It was a real democratic approach, and we brought certain tips, bullet points from this list to the table. And some of them I had to argue for, some Josh had to argue for, and I think it'll become apparent
we finally squared the circle, though, I think, at the end. Okay, so these are 10 tips for fantasy Premier League success and mental stability. Each bullet is equally important, Brandon. Fantasy Premier League success and mental stability, they go hand in hand, you know?
It's a little bit like the Ten Commandments, and they're all of equal value, but let's be clear. Like, the heavy hitters are...
Or the mental ones. Well, the problem is...
No, I was going to say the heavy hitters are up at the front.
Oh, yeah, we have front-loaded
like,
this a little bit.
Tip number one is... Don't kill.
Don't kill. Tip number two is don't covet thy neighbor's wife. No, but I think the mental. So just to kind of preface this a little bit, I mean, it's great to have a strategy, and I feel like obviously like no one on Twitter wants to talk about their mental process or whatever for being good at this game. But I really think it's equally important. You know, early on, it's easy to have a strategy. But, you know, there's also there's a famous line from Mike Tyson, you know, that everyone has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And I can't believe some of the plans that I'm seeing people say, like, oh, I'm going to do this for 2 weeks, and I'm going to wild card at the end of game week 2, and I'm ready for game week 3. And it's like, what about game week 7? You know, it's like you're just burning a wild, like you already know you're burning a wild card.
Sure, when all of your 3 strikers have torn their ACL going into game week 7, you've already played your 1 wild card.
So that's when the mental aspect is really important, because you have to be ready to handle some like pretty crazy stuff that's going to come your way. It always does.
Yeah.
And you know, early on in the season, I mean, everyone's fired up the first 10 weeks. I mean, I'm such a like dork about this stuff that I practically can't sleep the night before the first game week of the season. I was very reckless with my phone there.
That was Josh's phone ringing off the hook there. It's true. Yeah. This is the preseason point at which sky's the limit. This is going to be the year where I'm like in the top 100 in the world. Everything's going to go my way.
Right.
Sadly, the odds are that something is not going to break your way, and you're going to end up fighting for top 10K, top 100K.
Well, this happened to me last year. I mean, I you know, came off, you know, going into last season, I came off this you know, great finish. I finished, 1500th in the world. I felt like I played great the whole season. I was really happy with my finish. And I went in the next year and I was like, I want to finish in the top 100. I was like, I knew it was like easy, but
it's real American spirits are like up, onward and upward.
You might as well shoot for the best, right?
I'm not trying to disparage you.
At the very least, top 1,000. I thought, let me get from 1500 to top 1,000. And the second week of the season, I had like there were 3.3 million people in the league at that point or something like that. I had like the 3.2 millionth point total of that week. It was about as bad as you could possibly, like most dead teams were already doing better than me, 2 weeks into the season. And, you know, I kind of blew it. I felt like I immediately wild carded. I jumped on like every bandwagon except the ones that I should have. And it really threw me off, you know, right from the start. And I felt like I wasn't ready to roll with the punches enough.
Right.
And I think we haven't even gotten to the bullets yet, but a lot of them are about this, just like being ready to handle stuff that, that you're not, that you can't prepare for.
Right. Yeah. I think that leads us right into the first bullet, Josh.
All right. Bullet number one. It's a long, long, long season.
It's true, yeah. And our first comment on it being a long, long season, it's don't be reckless. Don't go on tilt. This list is going to be full of poker metaphors. But if things don't go your way in game week 1, you can right the ship. Don't go ahead and just like throw your wild card away, take a minus 12 hit in game week 2, just to avoid like, okay, so Theo Walcott was just a complete disaster for everybody in game week 1 last season. And it wasn't apparent if the man was even going to play under Arsene Wenger after game week.
Started a very reasonably priced 9.0, I believe. Didn't start in the Community Shield.
Yeah.
And so we were all a little bit worried, and we thought, well, he's just resting him. And nope. Ox is starting in his place game week 1.
So, I mean, wild card strategy sort of goes beyond the fact that it's a long, long season. It's again, that mental stability of you have to be confident in the fact that if you have a bad week, if you start off slowly, you have plenty of time to make up a bit of ground. Don't be hasty.
Right. You have to see you have to remember how highly owned most of these players are. You know, no one's going to wild card because your fifth midfielder had a bad week.
Right.
You know, if it's one of the top players, then it probably affected most people. You're not uniquely damaged by this.
Well, how much ground did you actually make up last season? I mean, you were talking about how you just had the worst start of last season, and toward the third of the season, you covered like a million
spots. 1.2 million spots over the last several games. It can always be done, you know? And so I did creep into the top 100K at least by the end of the season.
So we've got a few people that reached out to us on Twitter asking about wild card strategy early in the season. Like, would it make sense to... it seems unconventional, but set up a team in which you would plan to wild card in game week 3 or game week 4. And I think what you're saying about Mike Tyson, Josh, is totally right. You can plan for that all you want, but you'll probably have bigger problems to solve either earlier or later. That wild card early in the season is going to be needed to solve big problems that you won't plan for.
And let's face it. I mean, you know, probably something like, I don't even know what the right percentage would be. Let's say like 75%. If you're not a dead team already, like right off the bat, 75% of all managers are going to...
Is that a dig at my MLS fantasy team?
Yeah. How's it going for you, Brandon?
I scored 55 points this past week. Nice. I had no idea how.
Zardes? Do you still have Zardes?
Zardes is my captain, I think.
Most of us are going to end up wildcarding the first 3 or 4 game weeks, but yeah, really, really wait as long as you can. And when you wildcard, try not to wildcard it before game week 2, at least, you know, try to give yourself at least a couple weeks, because it's hard to know. I mean, I think this season is a particularly unique season. In some ways it almost argues for an early wildcard. Because you have a couple players who are going to be starting the season a little bit late because of the Euro Cups. But I think more importantly, you've got Pep, you've got Jose, and you have Conte. Yeah. And we don't really know how they're going to line up yet.
Right.
You know, I mean, it could be that Conte has to... I mean, you can kind of, you know, read a little bit into it from preseason and from the way they talk about these players and who they ultimately bring in if there are any more transfers coming through. But, you know, it could be that Conte decides that Willian is not central to his plans and that he's going to run everything through John Obi Mikel or something like that, you know? And suddenly 5 million John Obi Mikel is like the most important player in the Premier League.
Absolutely. False nine.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like a ludicrous example, but like, you know, like we don't really know, you know, is someone like Nolito on, you know, 9 million midfielder for Manchester City. It's very hard for me to have him on my team at this point in the season because I don't know how Nolito is going to fit into those plans yet. You know?
And you've got a guy like David Silva who is also 9.0 that is going to be... Is he going to be central to the attack? Is he going to be pushed out of the
squad? He's going to hurt his ankle in game week 1 like he always does. And the
opposite. So here's a prediction that probably no one can prove false or true as the season goes. But of those three managers, Pep, Conte, and Mourinho, one of them is going to start the season like a house on fire. And maybe two of them. But one of them will not. One of them will founder a little bit. So, but who can predict which one? And I think that is the case, the wait and see case, and the don't panic case.
Yeah, don't panic.
Because even of those three managers, whichever one doesn't start out like a house on fire will probably figure it out.
But you can make it up. And I think this is even more important if you're in any kind of mini league. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, I think I was at one point, I was probably like, you ultimately beat one our head to head this year. But, you know, I think at one point I was 100 plus points behind, you know, and I made up like 87 points. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was a lot. Few game weeks.
It was a lot.
It can always be done, and I feel like sometimes people give up a little bit too early on the season. So that's really what bullet one's about.
Okay, so bullet number 2, groupthink giveth, groupthink taketh away.
I love that title.
It's good. That was a last minute rethink there on our part.
Okay, so we've got a few different points here all about, I mean, the kind of person who's listening to this podcast is probably somebody who's on several different websites, several different times during the day, right? Fantasy Football Fix and Fantasy Football Scout, and they're on Twitter, and you know they're on the Transfer Hub, and they're all over the place.
Your Reddit's your BBC.com, not the football page, but say like the F1 racing page.
And you see all of these rate my teams, right? And you see all of these like different options and. Sometimes it is true. I mean, there is something to be said for offering an option up and then seeing people say, and often there is strength and there's truth in numbers, the wisdom of crowds.
Okay, so what is the game show? Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Where you poll the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much every time the audience knows what the answer is.
Right, right. Except when it's like, you know, when it gets pretty difficult, and then it's 60-40, and sometimes they don't really know either. Yeah. You know, it's just hard to.
But imagine Who Wants to Be a Millionaire if it wasn't trivia, but a game of chance like the right. English Premier League.
I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's hard to. There is a kind of groupthink, but it's still guesswork, you know. Like we have you know, a reigning champion Leicester in game week one playing a Hull team that hasn't brought in anybody. The squad is like seven deep at this point. Like four people from the fans are going to be playing in that team. You know, playing Leicester in the opening.
Tom Huddleston has long since cut his hair.
Yeah, playing Leicester in the opening game week, and it looks like Mars is probably going to be there. I mean, they're not going to have Conte. They're going to have everybody else. I mean, Leicester could win 4-0, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have Man City at home.
Sunderland.
Yeah, to Sunderland. Also with the new manager, you know, decent one in David Moyes, but not as good as Sam Allardyce, from my opinion. And but, you know, and Sergio Aguero at home, you know. And so what's the better choice between those two? Well, like, the crowd may not be right in that case, you know. It's a guess.
Right.
These things are, you know, sometimes like the points are too fine. So don't put all of your faith in the group. All that said, if you don't captain the most popular option, it can destroy you. And no, there's no, you know, clear indication of that than game week 8 last year. There's this weird thing where every year game week 8 seems to be the biggest game week of the season. It was certainly true last year, outside of game week 34, I guess, the big double game week. The double game week to end all double game weeks. Game week 8 was, you know, Aguero at home to Newcastle. Scores five goals in about 20 minutes of total game time.
Yeah. The amount of text messages sent during those 20 minutes is...
Across the world. I know, exactly. Yeah, it almost knocked power out. The satellites couldn't handle it.
I thought either you had found Jesus during those 20 minutes or Aguero had scored another goal, because I just get these, oh God, texts from you.
No, we had both captained him. But if you didn't captain him, it could destroy you. And so I think that there are certain games, and I know that's a very captain-focused opening bullet here, but, you know, if there is a captain that everybody is going to be captaining, it probably behooves you to have them and to captain them, because it's just not worth the risk of not having them, because you're going to fall so far if you don't.
Right.
But if it's a question like game week one, where you really could get away with captaining Jamie Vardy or Aguero. I mean, Aguero obviously is the consensus pick, but I think that there are a lot of interesting options in game week one. Don't sweat that one as much, yeah. I think would be my advice. The second point in the groupthink take the way.
Number two, let's just call it commandment.
Commandment. is beware of highly owned risky picks in the opening game weeks. And I'm not talking here about Aguero or Sanchez or, you know, expensive players who we're not even sure if they're healthy, you know.
Right.
But I'm talking about people who it sort of gets in everybody's head that these are like the cheap, valuable players to have.
Yeah.
People like Theo Walcott, Matt Ritchie, Memphis Depay last season, who had huge ownership, and they had not played in the Premier League before. We didn't know what we were getting with these guys.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Ritchie turned out okay in the end. You know, mediocre, I suppose.
I mean, he paled in comparison to, say, Callum Wilson, who turned out to be the Bournemouth pick. But, yeah, right. I guess if you stuck with Ritchie, it wasn't a complete disaster for you.
But the problem is if you bring in these players, especially if they aren't at the highest level, you know, I mean, you know, someone like Eden Hazard falling off the way he did last year is such a rarity. It's almost you almost don't want to read too much into it because you may draw the wrong conclusions from it.
Right.
But I think that, you know, players who have never really performed in the Premier League, who suddenly become highly owned, if they don't perform in the first game week or two, everyone's going to drop them when they play their wild card. Yeah. So many people play their wild card in the first couple game weeks. Suddenly, you could lose like $500,000 in team value.
Yeah.
And that team value can really hamper you if you want to jump on some other bandwagon. I mean, it's, you know, in most seasons, you're not going to have people like the Leicester players last year who you can, you know, grab at $5.5 million even, you know, three or four weeks into the season.
We were so spoiled last season. I think that everyone's struggling putting their team together now because everyone who mentally, was the bargain...
Mentally, we can't handle it, I think, still. I mean, you know, Riyad Mahrez scores, you know, whatever. It was like 18 goals and 18 assists last season. I don't think those numbers are right. But, you know, number one performer in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Priced at a very reasonable 9.5. Same price as Dimitri Payet, who had like a third of his numbers.
Yeah.
And everyone's still like, well, I don't know. That seems a little high to me. You know, it's hard not to read into those starting numbers from last season. So I guess the point is, I wouldn't take a risk on too many of these players. And, you know, I think that because their value can fall so much if they don't perform.
Okay, so we have a list of certain groupthink contenders for the season 2016-17.
Right.
Victor Valdez, a goalkeeper who hasn't played more than like two or three matches outside of like we're traveling in China during the summer. With United,
Victor Valdez is like a if you know, I guess there is a soccer Hall of Fame. It's not really like a big deal as far as I could. He's a Hall of Famer, you know, a Hall of Fame player. Won more Champions Leagues than you know many teams in the Premier League combined. Most teams in the Premier League combined. But yeah, I mean the guy is he's older and there's a reason he couldn't. He was third team last year on Manchester United. And
goalkeepers are funny things though. Like Aurelio Gomez. Last year for Watford, older player, he'd been in and out of the league, and he'd been a joke at times in the league. He comes in with a promoted Watford. Nobody really knows what that team is going to do. I don't think Watford's defense was particularly good, but somehow Gomez becomes a Superman on that team and a Superman FPL player. Or you could have a great goalkeeper like Rob Green. I mean, I know Rob Green has been a scapegoat in many matches, league-wise and for the national team. But he just has – he was playing on that garbage QPR team, and he couldn't score an FPL point to save his freaking life.
Right.
So a lot of the goalkeeper situation depends a little bit on the team form. And how many penalties they're going to save through the season.
I mean, Steve Mandanda on Crystal Palace is the same way. I mean, I you know, I currently have him in my squad, but, you know, I was just reading today. I mean, the guy hasn't even joined the club yet. You know, he's been, you know, he's been in France, and I think he's joining the club finally this week. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't played a match for Crystal Palace. Now, one assumes that he will eventually take the spot from Hennessy, but it might take 6 weeks.
McCarthy's been playing for them in their preseason, not that means anything.
Yeah, so McCarthy is being linked right now with Hull City, and, you know, I know everyone's really excited about having Jakubovic, the 4 million Hull defender. But I imagine that, if Hull makes a transfer before the deadline and they bring in McCarthy, they probably slot him in right away. And, you know, he's only 4.5 million, so he might be interesting on Hull. But, so I'd be a little wary of Jakubovic, too. Another kind of, you know, consensus player starting to build up some ownership because everyone wants that extra money. And it may work out, but if they don't bring anyone in, I would definitely think about bringing him myself.
So, and Andre Gray, he's another guy that we see showing up in a lot of RMTs online. Somehow a consensus pick, a groupthink pick. You're not sold on Andre Gray, are you?
No, I mean Gray right now is nearing 10% ownership at 6.5 million.
Which is, now that's
this
wild.
May be,
I mean,
English
look
fans.
At the Negredo is at 6.5, and that's a guy that's definitely proven himself.
I'm not very bullish on Negredo either, to be honest. But
is it the rosary bead tattoo?
I think that's really the fact that he hasn't done anything good in about 3 years.
You haven't read his book, have you?
I have not.
Sensational.
But Gray, I mean, first of all, I didn't even know his first name until like a week ago. And now I'm thinking about bringing him in. You know, it's like you go to his Wikipedia page and everyone starts talking about him. I have never seen Andre Gray play. Now, that does not mean he's not a good player, but I'm a little wary of having Andre Gray, because if Andre Gray doesn't perform well, it's going to be a mass exit on that player. And then I'm forced to burn a transfer to bring him out right away. Otherwise, I've got a 6.5 million player who's going to be 6.1 come game week 3 because everyone is moving on to Charlie Austin or whoever's, you know, Shane Long, whoever's performing really well in that mid-lower tier third forward bracket.
All right, so to wrap up point number two, groupthink giveth, groupthink taketh away. There is a reward to following groupthink, but also if you choose the right moment to be rogue, to be maverick, it can definitely pay dividends as well. So,
absolutely.
So choose your moments wisely.
Which actually ties well with bullet number three. And bullet number three is there won't be a 3.5 million tie for first place.
So what this means is it's these all build on top of each other. It's a long season, and because of that, frankly, no one is just going to have the exact same score when everything falls into place. So don't be afraid to follow the template, because you're going to need a lot of those points that everyone else is accumulating from the highly owned players. I often make this metaphor to Wheel of Fortune, where it got to the point in the final round of Wheel of Fortune where everyone would pick their consonants and vowels, R-S-T-L-N-E.
Right.
And it was just no fun because everyone got those same letters. So now when you get to the final round of Wheel of Fortune, you automatically get R-S-T-L-N-E, and then you get to pick three other consonants and a vowel. So these are your differentials. So one way to don't be scared of the template. You can work with a template, and it doesn't make you less a maverick. Think about ways you can tweak that template to your advantage to get you on the positive half of the 3.5 million.
I think I am particularly susceptible to this because I start thinking about differentials in like game weeks two. You know, I'm already thinking about differentials, you know, way too early in the season. And I think part of it is because I am one of these people that's constantly on the internet, on different forums, reading about this stuff. And it leads me to, I remember last year I was thinking about bringing in Gylfi Sigurdsson in like game week 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I can't bring in Gylfi Sigurdsson. Everyone's he must be the most owned player in the league at this point because everyone is talking about him.
Yeah.
And then you go onto the fantasy website and you look at the ownership percentage. It's like 3.7%. Now, it may be that everyone on these forums is on him,
yeah,
but it's still a an incredibly small portion of the audience at large.
Yeah.
And even if you're just following what many people are saying on these forums, you're still part of a very small minority, a very small group of people. So it's, you know, it's okay to follow like the train of logic, because there's just, it is so rare. It's like, I have been, you know, we've played in leagues for years and years with multiple people and you know, we've been in, you know, large, you know, I've been matched up in the annual FPL Cup every year and, you know, in the Hail Cheaters League. And I am often looking at so many other teams besides
my own.
You
didn't qualify for the cup last year. I'll point that one out.
That was a source of true humiliation. Well, I still haven't recovered from that. I couldn't believe it. I was like, how could this possibly happen? That was how bad that season went. But I think that
I want to hear from tweet us at Hail Cheaters if you yourself out there have not qualified.
I've not qualified for a cup. That is the only time that ever will happen. But I think that I can't remember ever looking at a team and it was exactly the same as mine.
Yeah.
Right? Never. Never happens. There are always
at least three. Okay, so point four. Wait to take your transfers as late as possible. This is probably one of our more practical tips.
Yes. I think this is especially true of Champions League weeks, or, you know, weeks when you have Champions League, Europa League. Perhaps you have a UEFA Super Cup that you're playing in. Who knows?
or international breaks as well, which are even more worrying because there could be 2 weeks that pass before the deadline comes.
I think that's what makes, unless you're on a wild card, the international breaks are always so painful as an FPL fan because you're like, if you're like me and I like to wait until the last possible minute to make my transfer, you're like, well, for 13 days, all I can do is think about what I'm going to do with my one transfer.
Yeah, right.
You know, possibly two if I've been smart enough to save it up. But I think the caveat here is if you're replacing a highly owned, a player with a large ownership percentage who got injured that game week, then I think you're justified in making a decision right away, even if it's a Champions League week. Mm-hmm. Because if that player is highly owned, everyone's going to be dropping him right away.
Right.
People who don't have the patience that you do, and his player value is going to drop. And there are often one or two people who are the kind of logical moves for that player. Mm-hmm. I mean, this happens every 4 or 5 weeks with Sergio Aguero, right? He has about 5 weeks where he's healthy, and then he gets injured for about three.
Yeah.
And so everyone kind of flocks to Lukaku or whoever, you know, Diego Costa. Exactly.
Oh, jinx.
Yeah. And so those players jump up, you know, two tenths, and the player that you've been patiently waiting until Friday to transfer out has dropped, and suddenly you've lost half a million, and half a million here, half a million there, not a big deal. Come the end of the season, it can make a huge difference in who you can pick up or drop.
Absolutely. When you're playing that winter wild card and you're ready to stock up on all the big name players, right, and you can't quite fit all of them in your squad because of that player, that team value. So, I mean, two strict rules to keep in mind is that during a given single transfer period, a player's value cannot increase or decrease by more than 0.3 million.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind when you're talking about making transfers based on value. Additionally, there are lots of great sites. Well, there are a handful of great sites that can actually help track the likelihood of a player value changing.
Right.
Fantasy Football Fix, I think, is particularly good at this, at telling you they can track transfers in, transfers out to tell you the likelihood of a player's value going up or down by however many points of a million. And
there's a price change predictor. It's fplstatistics.co.uk, and that's a really valuable site too.
Yeah. And the value change is not instantaneous. It only happens at, is it like midnight Greenwich Mean Time where they actually change the prices over?
Yeah, so 7 p.m. U.S. time, I think. So I know, like, if I want to transfer somebody that day, I do it before I leave for work, because I'm not sure if I'll be able to get home in time to beat the price change.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I tend to be a little bit of a worrywart when it comes to team value, and I'm more likely to make a transfer mid-game week, even before that game week is over. I'll make a transfer for the next game week.
Even as that player's scoring. Yeah. That's how ruthless you are. Yeah. As the ball goes into the net, you're transferring them out.
As the player is kissing their badge, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. You're in Brandon's team now. I mean, it's rare that I have been burned making a ridiculously early transfer. Clearly, it's the most logical and safe rule of thumb to wait a while, but if it were me, I'm not going to sweat this rule too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to wait as long as possible. I will say it almost never makes a big difference. But two or three times every year, if I make it, you know, like I will hold on to my transfer until Friday, and I'll be very glad that I did, because I'll have some other issue to shore up first.
Well, that was Luke Shaw for me last year when he broke his leg in that Champions League fixture. I had already played my transfer somewhere else, and I was really relying on Luke Shaw starting that following weekend. And then I had to play a bench player, probably Simon Francis or somebody like that.
I had an embarrassing situation, I think, last season where I transferred somebody, and it might have been like Pablo Zabaleta or something like that. And I transferred them in like the next day they got injured. And there's nothing more embarrassing than transferring a player in and out in the same game week.
Yeah.
It's almost like that's too much.
That's what happened to Matic for Chelsea last season. He got transferred. He got
subbed on.
He got subbed on. and then what, like 45 minutes later subbed off at halftime?
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what you did to poor old Pablo Zabaleta.
All right. Brings us to point number five. Form versus fixtures, Colin. Be prepared to adapt.
So this is definitely a bone of contention. This is one that we were arguing about as we were building this list. And I think largely because the last season is the one that's closest in the rearview mirror. And last year, more than many previous years, it was form over fixture. So you had a player like Jamie Vardy, who was low-priced, didn't command a lot of respect in the FPL, went on a little bit of a scoring spurt, and then his fixtures ahead were getting rough. And so everyone started saying, let's dump Vardy. There's no way he can keep it up. The fixtures are getting tough. He's just 6.0. It's not worth it. And lo and behold, he kept his form up. And that was largely true of a lot of bargain players last year. I mean, Robert Huth. I did not start Robert Huth against Manchester City, even though they had, like, in the earlier week, kept a clean sheet against another one of the top five teams.
But you just can't start Huth that way.
But then he goes on to score two goals.
Right. But that's a miracle. That will never. Robert Huth will never score two goals in a match again, let alone away at the Etihad. But I think that, you know, in general, playing fixtures over form has been the key to success traditionally. I mean, there's a lot of after the fact ways of looking at this stuff where you're like, oh, of course, Jamie Vardy is a great player who, you know, at 29 is suddenly going to emerge as a world class starter for the English national team that Arsenal's going to try to bust on the offseason.
You see the exact thing happen with Dimitri Payet last year.
Right, exactly. So, you know, of course we all should have known that. Well, you know, Jamie Vardy had played the season before. He lost his first season in the Premier League and he'd scored, you know, I think 4 goals all season. He had more assists than he had goals. He was more of like the Troy Deeney of the 2014-2015 season. You know, set everybody else up. And so then he explodes. And, you know, the way that most managers traditionally have been able to achieve success is to hop on or hop off those players real fast, you know. And you don't expect Jamie Vardy to score 14 weeks in a row. You think it's not going to last. Mm-hmm. And so you don't ride the kind of flavor of the month the way that other people do, and you stay away from it.
Right.
Because you know that, you know, we saw this last year. Remember, who's the captain of Crystal Palace? It's the Australian guy.
Oh, Jednik. Miel Jednik.
Yeah, Jednik had like, I think it was like, he scored like 3 matches in a row or something. There was some crazy Jednik run.
Was he was on penalties, I think, before Kabay showed up.
Yeah, but maybe because Kabay was injured or something like that. But he'd scored a couple goals. Maybe it was 2 or 3 games in a row. And suddenly people were talking about like captaining Jednik in the next game week. I'm like, you can't.
Who was talking about
it? I saw people.
Out there in the streets.
Out there in the streets. I heard murmurs. but, you know, it's just in general, these things are fluky and they're not going to last. And it doesn't mean you have to stay with the tried and true and Captain Sergio Aguero every game whatever. But, you know, and it doesn't mean you can't take flyers on these people either.
Yeah.
But I think in general, you know, one's form tends to correlate with one's fixtures. And if a player like Jamie Vardy scores 3 goals, you know, if he scores a hat trick in the opening game against Hull, it's not necessarily indicative. Well, now it is, I think, because we know. Did he win the Golden Boot last year? He was right up there, right?
Harry Kane won it. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, you know, but let's say like Mohamed Diame scores a hat trick in the opening game. Away to Leicester. It's a miracle of miracles. Mo Diame. The new, you know, new flavor of the month. I'm not going to be excited to bring Mo Diame in because I've seen Mo Diame in the Premier League before. I know what he is capable of.
He is the one player that is probably immune to the charm of a hat
trick. But it's like Yannick Bolasie is like this. Like every season we get tempted by Yannick Bolasie.
Oh, yeah.
It never happens with Yannick Bolasie. You know, he can string together 2 game weeks or 3 game weeks and then it doesn't work. You know, he gets injured or he's not. Yeah, even 3 is pushing it. Exactly. Yeah, so beware of the Yannick Bolasies of the thing
I always notice too with those. Okay, so form, as we notice, is definitely more true of the top players. But you saw this with Jamie Vardy last season. When his form dropped off, it like dropped off a cliff. He stopped scoring for, you know, what, five or six weeks.
Yeah.
Romelu Lukaku looked like he was on pace to actually top Jamie Vardy's record that he set in the same season. But then Lukaku's form stopped and it fell off a cliff. So
when his fixtures got worse. Right? This great run of fixtures from game week 6 to game week 18 last season, and then it fell off when they got worse.
So this is an interesting mental point to make, which loosely ties to this form versus fixtures. We're talking about being tempted to transfer players in or transfer players out based on form, and you're talking about Pablo Zabaleta. How do you feel about those players that you just have bad associations with? Okay, so maybe you had Vardy or Lukaku in your squad when they weren't scoring, you dropped them, and then they started scoring. Are you likely to bring them?
I have a perfect example here, which is Gerard Deulofeu, who is... you know, he led the line this game week for Everton in a friendly match.
Wait, he played up top?
Yeah. And he is integral to Koeman's new Everton squad.
Okay.
But it's Gerard Deulofeu.
He's the new Tadic.
Everyone who has owned Gerard Deulofeu over the years knows that this guy gives you you know, somewhere between 40 and 60 minutes of game time.
Yeah,
and
very
foppish haircut. He actually always looks good when he plays, right? But there's just something about the way that Martinez managed him where you never really knew what you were getting. Yeah. He would kind of be isolated on the wing. He's kind of a flash player, too. Yeah, so
it can
be
a
little frustrating, but he is a quality player, no doubt. But he has not been utilized as a central figure necessarily in the attack, right?
Right. Yeah.
So if he is, he's a very tending player. He's 6.5 million. Everton has some pretty strong fixtures to start the season. I'm planning to bring an Everton defender to start the season. Could I bring in Talifeu, knowing how frustrated he was last season? And so, yeah. So I do think it is a factor. You know, it's. It could almost be its own point, Brandon.
Yeah, yeah. Almost, but it didn't make the list. All right, Josh, we've got five more rules to go. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the next five.
Okay, good.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, we're back, and these last five, I like it because it's a mix of the practical and the emotional.
And yeah, that speaks to me.
Yeah.
I'm definitely an emotional FPL manager.
And the first one, bullet point number six, is one that experienced managers know, but just to really reinforce it, make sure that the players on your squad are starters. Now, you would think that this would only have to apply to your fifth midfielder, but you know, last season, you know, to go back to Theo Walcott. You know, me and many other managers were sucking into the idea that Theo Walcott was a surefire starter on this Arsenal squad. And I don't believe he started the first two game weeks of last season.
Mark, his fantasy football scout, is still wiping the tears away from many of fantasy.
I actually couldn't visit that. I mean, I know he, you know, it's not like he's like on the squad. There's no reason that he should have known this. But it was hard for me to go on that site for a week or so after after I brought him in. So. Just, you know, you want to start the season on a high note. Everybody does. It's just, right. It's more fun. It sets you up for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
A couple low weeks can really mess with your head a little bit.
Yeah. The start of the season, I think defenders are always the bigger question mark for me. So you usually have one slot left to fill in both the midfield and in your defense before you've got your 15 men. And there's always one defender that you're going to have to bring in because they're the only ones that are left that are affordable from a promoted squad. And promoted squads are going through the transfer window. They're bringing in new defenders. Are they bringing them in? Who was the old Everton defender who went to Bournemouth and, like, never played a single game?
Sylvain Distin.
Sylvain Distin. You were like, oh, yeah, I'll bring Distin in, and he's a guaranteed to right. be maybe captain of the
squad. We forgot he was 47 years old.
But it would be so clutch if you could parse that, oh, this 4.0 defender is actually going to be in the starting lineup.
Now, you fell susceptible to this last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, I brought in
Reece Oxford
from West Ham because he started in game week one and he was my first transfer that I made in the game, I think, after game week one because I was like, this guy looked great against Arsenal and right. he's 4.0 and he's going to be starting in a forward role out of position.
And you it took you about 18 weeks to get him off your team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Right? So that is the problem, I guess, when, I mean, we can argue about, you can pull one or two pieces of dead weight in your squad if you really need to. But the rotation risk that starts happening when Champions League gears up or an unforeseen injury that happens after you've made your weekly transfer, to have as many people, if not 15 people, as guaranteed starts is going to give you so much peace of mind.
I really do agree. And I think that if you're going to throw a defender at the end of your bench, I think there's definitely a case to be made. You know, Nick Cummings on the Transfer Hub website has been talking about this a lot about how you really don't necessarily need a fifth defender.
Yeah.
I think that you know, whoever that guy is going to be, like if you wanted to stick a 4 million guy at the end of your bench, guy or girl. You know, maybe there'll be some women in the league this year already at 4.0.
I would love to see that.
If you're going to stick, you know, someone in there, don't stick someone in who's highly owned. I'm seeing, you know, Juan Carlos Paredes is a Watford defender who is up to 17% ownership in the Premier League. Now, do we necessarily know that Paredes is going to be starting every game week? And also, Watford have the worst opening five game start I can imagine. I mean, it's awful, right? they play away to Southampton, home to Chelsea, home to Arsenal, away to West Ham, home to Man United. And even away to Burnley is not a great fixture.
I have a guy, my fifth defender right now in my squad is a similarly named guy from Middlesbrough. He's actually 4.5. Emilio Nissou Lopez.
Good name. Great player.
So there you go. I actually know, I love the new FPL site. It tells you what number they are, what their kit number is. He's number 24. Look out for him. I have no idea if this guy's going to start or not.
So Paredes rated 4.0. We know that a lot of managers are going to be wildcarding very early on. 70% of all managers already have him.
Yeah.
If they do as we expect, which is not keep clean sheets in their first two or three game weeks, everyone's going to jump ship, and suddenly Melvin Paredes, where did I get Melvin from?
You're thinking about Melvin Mumbazi.
I guess so. Juan Carlos Paredes is going to be down to like 3.7 million because his ownership is so high to start the season that suddenly you're totally screwed, and you're going to have this 3.7 million hole on your bench that you're never going to be able to replace because you're never going to be finding anyone that cheap, and you're going to have to move other players just to get him off your team. So I should almost call this the Juan Carlos / Melvin Paredes.
So it's a flexible rule, and definitely with defense and midfield. Okay, so defense formation you're most likely to play, history would tell you, who knows looking forward, would be three defenders. That leaves
What does Gibbons say?
Gibbons says five defenders, Christmas tree formation. So you have room on your bench for two defenders, and that minimizes rotation risk. The bigger place you want to think about rotating is your goalkeeper. Okay, so you might say, I'm going to go big with a primo top of the line 6.0.
Ooh, primo. Ooh.
he's going to be my goalkeeper. I don't even know if there is a goalkeeper in the game that's 6.0 this season. I mean, the likes of David De Gea are at 5.5, which everyone's bringing in. But if you bring in De Gea at 5.5 and that only leaves you enough cash in the bank to have a goalkeeper that's not playing, then if De Gea is out for whatever reason, you're getting no points from your goalkeeper. So the goalkeeper is probably the largest rotation risk and the point in your squad where you need to make the most certain that you have two starting players.
Who are your two starting keepers on your team right now?
So right now I have David De Gea and I have Mandanda. So I was thinking about Crystal Palace and their fixtures to start the season, and I was having trouble picking between their defenders, and it's another question of what's that starting back line going to look like when the season starts, right. And some of these guys like Scott Dan are well overpriced, and if Mandanda is the man
at
4.5, I feel like that's a solid rotation.
I think that's fair. I'm reluctant to bring in De Gea. Right now I have Shaw, Luke Shaw, instead of De Gea.
I like Luke Shaw, too. And I guess I shouldn't even say rotation because it's a little confusing. If you're going to bring in a heavy hitter, primo goalkeeper, why would you ever... I'm loving it. Why would you rotate him? If it's a traditional Mourinho defense that's watertight, you're going to want to play him most weeks, and in the weeks where there is not an enticing fixture for United, just hope that De Gea makes a lot of saves.
David De Gea is I understand the temptation to bring him in, and I may double up in the Man U defense ultimately and bring in De Gea and Shaw. I'm not sure. I actually probably won't because I like having the extra million. I have a Heaton Mandanda.
You don't even want to spend it. You just like having it.
That's my million. That's for me. I have Heaton Mandanda at the moment. But that's probably going to change. But the appeal of having De Gea and the reason I may ultimately bring him back is you probably have about three fixtures all season where you wouldn't want to start De Gea, right? Maybe away to Chelsea, away to Man City, away to Arsenal, maybe away to Leicester, I guess, out of 38 weeks, you could probably start De Gea 34 weeks. So if that's the case, look at those four fixtures. There's probably someone who corresponds pretty well with those fixtures, a 4.5 million guy. Maybe you bring in Jakupovic and just hope he earns the spot, and then you get a 9.5 million.
Jakupovic, am I right?
Jakupovic. So yeah, I think it's interesting. I think we've totally lost the plot here, though.
No, we're still talking about rotation risk and getting starting players. Well, let's just jump to point number seven, because six, we've covered that. I think it's good.
I think seven falls into the mental category.
Okay, so seven is
mental strength category.
Remember that even the best players don't score every week.
Wise, whoever wrote that. I wrote that. Though it may seem like it, I wrote earlier today, even Sergio Aguero and Luis Suarez, when he played for Liverpool, don't score every week. Sometimes, not even 2 weeks in a row.
Even more so with Luis Suarez, less with Aguero. I was so confounded those weeks when Suarez didn't score for Liverpool. I was just like, did somebody break my television?
It can be so hard to remember these players. And I may even just be saying this as, you know, so we, you know, if you're on FPL Twitter in particular, or let's say you're on the, there's like a few different ways to watch a particular match if you're an FPL nerd, right? You can be on FPL Twitter. Mm-hmm. God knows there's a million and one different people you can follow and watch, and some need to be muted, and that's just how it is, you know.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. You can follow along on
like Reddit.
On Reddit, on the Fantasy Football Scout chat function. Uh-huh. I just prepared for a million rate my teams while you're trying to watch these matches.
Yeah, I guess I happen to have everybody who scored a goal on my team.
Yeah, I got a 98 points through two matches. Is that any good?
Yeah, players left to play.
Yeah, plus
my 200 points.
Yeah, I got 200 points plus nine players my triple captain to come. Is that any good, or am I down? It's the braggiest place in the world. But remember that, because, you know, so the point of this is there will be a game week when 99.999% of all managers are going to be captaining Sergio Aguero, you know, probably at home to Hull or something like that. And that game week, Sergio Aguero is going to get injured in the 8th minute. And almost all of us are going to get screwed. And there's going to be one guy who triple captained Steve Mandanda the game week when Mandanda has two penalty saves and a clean sheet. Yep. And they're going to screenshot that and send it to everybody like it's some sort of justification for making this insane pick. And then you look at, like, and of course, inevitably, like, you find that player's team and they're, you know, ranked 2.8 million in the world or whatever, right? Because they're making terrible decisions every single game week.
They didn't quite know how that triple captain ship worked.
Yeah. But you know, and everyone can score every week. And this is like the hardest, it's like the simplest, on the one hand, self-explanatory, but so much of my, like, insanity over the games over a long season is like trying to bear in mind that just because I made the right transfer, made the right move.
Yeah.
You know, I brought in Dimitri Payet, you know, way to a, you know, whatever, you know, a Swansea team that has two injured defenders or two injured. You know, Ashley Williams isn't playing this game week, you know, and Dimitri Payet's going to run rampant. And then Payet gets a yellow card and is subbed off in the 55th minute or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, well, like, that didn't work out. Like, I made a terrible decision. It's like, well, no, you just, you know, not everybody scores every game week. Yeah. You know, even the best players don't score every game week.
There was it can be argued whether it worked out for me in the long term or not. But there was a while last season where I was practicing basically tantric FPL, where I had brought in Sergio Aguero after he came back from injury. He's had that wonder strike against Liverpool, right? Then he went out injured again. And I just decided,
week after week,
I was going to wait out his injury. And he was on my bench for, I believe, a solid 4 weeks. And every time we'd get on this podcast, and Josh, you'd be like, you still have Aguero on your bench? Like, gee, that's an awful lot of money to tie up on your bench.
13.6 million.
No, it'll be fine. I just have to wait long enough. And
in the end, he did score two goals over the last 20.
He came good in the end.
Yeah, he came good in game week 34. That's true.
And I would argue there that I'm not convinced, and maybe it's a testament to my own abilities, that I wasn't going to be able to do any better by bringing.
That was what I loved about your logic. There's no one else. There's no strength.
I mean, I had the, and we'll get to this later.
You could have brought an old five-pointer, Olivier Giroud.
I was getting some good output from my midfield during that period. I think my team was humming along enough where I didn't have to. Ozil was, at that point, he was on cruise control.
Yeah, and 11-pointers week in and week out.
But yeah, it's true. So don't lose your mind every time your heavy hitter doesn't score in a game week.
All right.
All right. Point number eight. You want to take this one, Josh?
Sure. Point number eight is, and this one's very close to my heart because this is a siren song that have caused many an Odysseus to crash on the shores. That was as poetic as I could go.
Really it's good enough.
It was good enough. Damn it. Don't fall for the lore of the super cheap starter.
Okay, so for example, super cheap starter. Who are you thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking. Okay, there's almost two different categories here.
Yeah, because I can think of the midfield type, the striker type, the Reese Oxford type.
I was thinking of the there are two main types. One is the cheap striker and one is the cheap midfielder. Cheap defenders, you know, that's we're going to have some defenders who start every game week. That's almost its own problem because they often are for bad teams and you're not getting a lot of clean sheets or attacking potential in many cases.
Yeah.
So let's say that in game week 1, Connor Wickham goes nuts. Hat trick from Connor Wickham, game week 1.
Okay, it's plausible.
It's plausible. You've got your friend Gray, the Burnley striker you've never seen Fred play before, who everyone told you to bring in, so you did, and then you're like, I got a two-pointer game week 1. I'm going for my boy, Connor Wickham.
Never done me wrong.
Never done me wrong in the 1 week I've been paying attention. And you bring in Connor Wickham, and he proceeds to do what is more typical of Connor Wickham, which is go about 18 weeks without scoring.
Sure.
That's kind of Connor Wickham's comfort zone, right? 36 points over 18 weeks is really...
That's how he makes his money.
A little bit less because he'll come on as a sub most of the time.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he'll get one assist, eight substitute appearances. But he'll average out to about 2 points, 2 points a game.
Yeah.
So you bring in Connor Wickham, he stinks, and a lot. But everyone else has done it too, right? We all jump on the Connor Wickham. I remember doing this very specifically with a guy you brought up earlier, which is Chris Brunt. Remember Chris Brunt in like the 2010-2011 season had like two goals in the first game week, and so I like practically built my midfield around Chris Brunt. You know, it was my Brunt-led attack.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens then is that they revert back to the player they really are, whether it's a, more of a defensive midfielder who had a really good match.
Guy who slide tackles a lot.
God help us if, he's not, well, no, they're Newcastle's relegated. I was going to say, who's the,
Cech Tiote.
Wild card,
yellow card, man.
God help us if Cech Tiote, went off in the first game week. Everyone will be running, or someone like Victor Wanyama is always a popular pick, because... But ultimately, let's just stick with the Connor Wickham example to keep things clean here. So let's say you drop Gray, you bring in Wickham. Wickham goes 4 weeks without doing anything, and his price is falling as everyone else cuts bait and wild cards, and you're holding on. You're not wild card, and you're going to stand with the ship. And suddenly, his value is down to like 5.4 million. And because of some other moves you made, you don't have any money in your bank, and you're stuck with a 5.4 million forward. It's going to take you like three moves to get Connor Wickham out of here.
I was waiting for a happy ending to the story where Wickham scored eight goals in a game.
It's going to be like game week 5, game week 6, and game week 7. Every transfer is going to be built around getting Connor Wickham out of your team. Uh-huh. And it is the most frustrating thing. It happens to all of us all the time. Now you could argue that
then you end up with Ricky Lambert in place of Connor Wickham, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes you can just burn 4 points too. And in a case like that, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
But then you're stuck burning 4 points too. And, right. There's certainly a time and a place for burning points, but game week 4, I think, is not generally when I want to do it. Why put yourself in that position?
Right.
So don't fall for the lure of the, especially if it's a cheap striker. I mean, Agallo was a bit of an exception because we didn't really know anything about Agallo.
Yeah.
His conversion rate in the championship was fantastic.
Yeah.
He hadn't played a lot of minutes and he hadn't played a lot of matches. And so I really don't know how anyone could have presumed to know how he was going to perform the first. I mean, obviously he fell off completely in the second half, but the first 20 weeks.
Just got a hot hand.
But he rode it for 20 weeks. And really, it was very, if you brought him in, you really made the right move in that case. But someone like Connor Wickham, I mean, I'm looking now at the sub 6'4". I mean, it's just a laundry list of players who have burned out in the league at one point or another, right?
Okazaki.
But Okazaki never plays a full 90. Yeah, he plays like 55 minutes. Yeah, Okazaki, you've got the good Kone, you've got Fraser Campbell, you've got David Nugent. I mean, these are just not players that you want.
Oh, Marvin Emnes from Swansea, who scored 2 points last season.
Barrow. Emnes and Barrow. My God, there is no one leading that forward line for Swansea. It really does make...
I saw something online that they were going to be back in for Wilfred Bony.
I saw that too, but I don't know if that's wishful thinking.
Yeah.
It really does make Ayu an interesting player, doesn't
it? Yes, it does. That's true.
So looking at the sub-6 defenders, I mean, it's just a laundry list of players who have had opportunity again and again and again to perform in the Premier League and haven't done it. So if you're going to take the chance, I would not even recommend it if you can. I mean, I am probably going to have a 6.5 million striker in my squad.
Yeah.
I'm kind of leaning towards Charlie Austin if I feel like he's actually going to start. But I definitely wouldn't bring in a Fraser Campbell type at any point, because there's just no way at 27, after 7 or 8 years in the league, these guys are finally going to discover some quality. I just empirically, it does not work out.
All right. Point number 9, read the forums and not just the biggest sites. So we're talking about forums on the Reddit FPL forum or Fantasy Football Scout or various Facebook groups that you might belong to, like the Transfer Hub site.
The Starting 11 forums. A lot of fan forums, I think, are a great place to go. I find there are often in the season I'm worried about a player, especially like maybe a player played in the Champions League in midweek. This happened, I remember, a couple years ago, this big thing with Raheem Sterling, where he was still very cheap when he was playing for Liverpool, and he was a player that was highly owned, but they were managing his minutes very carefully. And so you'd almost have to go to Liverpool forums and see what they were saying, and it was like this sort of bib theory. Mm-hmm. And if he was wearing a certain color bib, then it meant that he was less inclined to play that week, and you're like, all right, cool. Now I definitely need to replace my injured, I need to replace whomever, because I know that I can't bring in Sterling. I'm going to be on two players.
Right.
So I think that Fantasy Football Scout actually has a post that goes up once a week or so, and it's called What Fans Are Saying. And I really think that is one of the absolute best posts that they put out there.
Yeah.
And I don't mind saying that
because
we don't put out blog posts and we're not making any money on this anyway. So, but I think it's a really valuable feature, because I think that, I think they really synthesize a lot of things that what the fans are saying. And I think they're almost invariably right.
Yeah.
They're so right about who's going to start and who's going to be subbed or benched, any particular game week.
It totally reminds me of becoming a young music fan. I remember getting way into like indie music right around the time that message forums were beginning to be a thing. Mm-hmm. And that was the place you could go. Say you didn't have a trustworthy older brother or sister to introduce you to things that weren't White Snake or Tori Amos.
Right.
No offense to all the Tori Amos heads out there. But it was just like, it's basically just real talk about like, hey, this is what I'm in. This is what I'm into. This is what I think is good. Try it. If you don't like it, no big deal. And you get that same sort of authentic. I mean, some of the people on these forums are just crazy. And bib theories in some contexts can be lunacy.
The bib theory is a controversial theory.
But I do often take it as a safe space and a good place to find advice.
And then the larger point is don't just go to one website. Right. Go to lots of different places. Mm-hmm. Find different voices and don't just listen to the comment section of the Fantasy Football Scout, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going back
to disparage the comment section in there,
it goes back to groupthink.
Right,
exactly. As well, like you have to have a proper sample size. If you're really researching something, take a proper sample size. Right.
All right, last one's all you, Brandon.
This is my favorite point. I insisted that we include this one because I think everything we've talked to in these 9 bullets leading up to number 10, hopefully you found it to be practical and usable. But number 10 is a little more mystical. It's get lucky. So this get lucky, and I know, Josh, you want to talk about this. There is a lot that goes into luck, or a lot that can be misread into good luck versus bad luck. But if you're looking to, say, be number 1 in the world, that's a sensational season. That's going to happen through great research, great determination. You're also going to have a little luck. Additionally, along the way, you're going to feel you've experienced some bad luck. And you know what? It's going to happen to everybody. Don't get down about it.
Right. I think that especially going into a season, you know, luck is hope. You know, like this could be your year. Yeah. You know, this could be the year when everything falls into place. You know, if you've already finished first in the world, anytime you listen to one of these interviews with any manager finished first in the world, you know, they're all great managers. They all played excellently, and they typically have a track record of playing very well as well. But it's not like they finished eighth and then fourth and then second and then first. It's like they finished 18,000th or something and then 8,000th and first or whatever. You know, you need a little bit of luck to win. And if you have some bad luck, it's probably going to even out as well. And the point is that even if you're in a league where you have one player who is, you know, the most dominant player, you know, like if I assume that everyone listening to this podcast is the absolute best player in their league. We weren't the best players in the Hail Cheater Super League last year, I'm sad to say.
Close. We were close.
But luck, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And yeah. Maybe over the course of 18 weeks, you know, everything turns around and...
Yeah. And, or not even the course of the entire
everything falls
season.
Into place, I should
Sometimes
say.
Sometimes it's just down to one game week. I mean, we had a head-to-head last week or last season, and I mean, I had brought in Winston Reed as a transfer,
right.
And clean sheet goes out the window for West Ham. Well, guess what happens in like the 93rd minute? Winston Reed scores a goal. I mean, you can call that many things. One of those things you could call it is luck. But I think the point you're making, Josh, is true. I could at least have some hope that Winston Reed, my defender's going to score a goal. Maybe I have some hope that my goalkeeper is going to make a penalty save to save my head-to-head that week.
Yeah.
And it could happen.
Exactly. And just embrace that that's part of what makes it fun. You know, that is the Phil Hellmuth line, the poker player, about how, you know, without luck, I'd win every tournament. And, you know, but if that were true and the same five players were in every tournament, then no one would play at all. And so,
right.
You know, luck is what's going to lead someone to triple captain, you know, someone in some insane game week and then post it forever and make you want to, like, leave the Premier League to begin with. But that's – you got to embrace it. That's part of the fun.
All right. Get lucky. No longer the summer song of 2015. It is the 10th commandment of the Always Cheating podcast.
That's
Josh,
right.
Should we post these rules on our website somewhere so people can revisit them and tear them to shreds
that's
as much
right.
as they like?
Add your own. So go on to Twitter, Facebook, add any comments of your own. You can also absolutely tear apart our comments if you want. I would love to know what you think. But I'm particularly interested in the mental aspect of it, because I do find that the players that tend to win the big leagues and the mini leagues are players who are able to ride through, you know, the Christmas fixture period, and they're able to not make like hate transfers, you know, like if they get frustrated with somebody. And I really think that having the right mental game is the key to doing well.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of contributions from the Always Cheating community, we have some additional advice that came to us before we recorded the pod. This one from Jeff Petter. He says, his tip, go cheap on goalkeepers, especially early. Clean sheets are so hard to call, and at least with keepers on bad teams, you'll get save points. Also, start with Aguero. So much easier to sell if he gets injured rather than trying to rearrange your team to afford him if he explodes. So, I mean, that says it all right there from Jeff.
It really does. We actually didn't need this podcast.
That's
pretty much. Yeah.
So you can listen to Jeff's podcast at petteradvice at fpl.com.
Ross Lagerwood says, hey guys, great first podcast, and I'm super excited to get a mention, even if you got my name wrong. I think I might have called him Longwood on the last podcast, so sorry about that, Ross. It's Lagerwood, Lagerwood.
Josh has a long-standing history of getting surnames wrong.
That is very true, and players' names wrong, too. It says, we're the only Lagerwoods in the world. So
wow.
It's not a very common name.
I'm curious to know where that surname comes from, Ross.
So let us know about that, Russ. Last year was my first season in FPL, and the biggest learning curve for me was not giving up on players after a few bad weeks. Form is temporary, class is permanent. I got frustrated with Mahrez and ditched him 2 days later. He scored a hat trick. Won't be making the same mistake again. Keep up the good work. Hail cheaters.
Hail cheaters, Ross. Yeah, I mean, I think that's sensational advice. Don't give up hope. Don't give up just because, like we were saying, they did score.
I think we're talking about this like everyone has given up a hope already. There is a certain – but it's almost like this is like a time capsule podcast. It's like, remember this one, and then in 20 weeks, like, we'll have to, like, revisit this, the themes in this podcast.
I mean, more than anything else, I am excited to see who the Mahrez is this season, who the Aaron Ramsey is this season. There's no telling.
Exactly.
Okay, so our good buddy Trevor Ingerson, he writes in, and his rule of thumb, figure out your strategy with Aguero and forget about him after that, which is kind of what Jeff was saying. It's either easier to have than to have not.
I know. I want to not have him because because you want to outsmart everybody. Yeah. And he's so expensive at that. But especially given their game week one fixture, I think it's very hard not to have.
He broke the game, and he's broken the game for so long. I mean, you had players like Van Persie, who broke the game for two seasons, or Suarez for a season and a half, or however long it was. Aguero, he's just been around for a little too long now.
They should just give him you just have him on your team to start.
Yeah,
and then everyone just gets $87 million from there. Just $13 million is immediately allocated. Scott Gill, as I think he normally goes by. I say, forwards are the hardest to pick with so many overpriced strikers. Get your midfield right.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Midfield provides so many points, particularly if your midfielders are scoring goals. And
I think I'm guilty sometimes of overthinking my forward line, especially my third forward, and not paying enough attention to having the right balance in my midfield.
Yeah.
I was just looking at my midfield today, and I feel like I'm not. It's not where I want it to be right now. I mean, I'm trying to do too many things with it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I've got Mahrez and Mkhitaryan in there. I've got Redman and Ibe and Hezberg, the. I'm sure I'm not saying his name right, but he's this 4.5 million midfielder on Southampton.
Okay.
But, you know, of those two picks, I mean.
You don't have Emerson Hyndeman.
I don't have Hyndeman. But of those picks, I mean, who am I even confident in? I guess Mahrez against a, you know, a Hull team that doesn't have any players.
Yeah.
Mkhitaryan's a bit of a risk. Jordan Ibe, is he going to start? Mm-hmm. Nathan Redmond, is he going to start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hedgeberg, who knows if he's even going to make the 18, you know? Yeah. So there's a lot of chances there, but I've been thinking so much. I'm like, oh, my third striker.
Yeah.
And at some point, I need to have a little more stability in that midfield.
Stability and at least trouble. One heavy hitter. You have to be willing to pay for the likes of a De Bruyne or an Ozil.
Mkhitaryan and Mahrez are both 9.5 million.
I guess that's true. Mkhitaryan, though, being the worry, having not seen him play for United yet.
I feel like ideally, like my platonic midfield is like 11 million, or you know, let's say 10 million midfielder, 9 million midfielder, 7.5 million midfielder, 6 million midfielder, 4.5.
There you go.
Right? That's
that's put it in the rules.
It's hard to find that right balance, though.
All right. So rules of the game, there they are. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back. We are taking some questions from listeners.
Same old podcast. Always cheating.
All right, Brandon, we're back with some questions. Just a few here. So Chris Scott Grant from Twitter says, when drafting our initial squad, should we go for players who we think have high floors or go for guys with high ceilings? I feel like a lot of what we talked about so far has been about the high floor.
All right.
You do want a balance, obviously. I mean, you know, you want at least a couple guys who could totally. I mean, like you said, you want the Mahrez. You want a couple guys. I think there should be at least one player in your starting 11 who is a little untested.
Yes.
Who is, you know, Nathan Redmond is the one that I'm kind of excited about on Southampton, right?
Yeah.
He's a very talented player. Still really young. You know, he's been on the English, you know, under 23 team. He was very good for the first, I don't know, 25% of the season for Norwich last year. Hard to know how good he is because who was the second best player in that Norwich squad?
He's got a little bit of Andreas Townsend about him in that he's a very divisive player, or there are a lot of questions about him, but there will be numerous games throughout the season where he will show you why he's rated.
Yeah. He's the type of player where I feel like he falls into that like 6.5 or lower class.
I guess,
of
who you want to fit. I guess that's what it is, right? You want your expensive players to have the higher floor, yeah, right. And you want the cheaper players to have the higher ceiling.
Right. No, exactly. Next question comes from Banana Nose Maldonado. And he's at Get Nice on Twitter. He asks, when you look into an abyss, the abyss also looks into you. Question, best to plan an early wild card or allow things to unfold natch?
We talked about this earlier. I don't think you can plan for an early wild card. It's just, first of all, you're probably going to play one. Most of us do. But I certainly wouldn't plan for one. Ideally, I'm not playing my wild card till game week 18.
It is the saddest but most predictable story in FPL in that you are going to save your first wild card until like game week 15.
Right.
And it's going to be a game changer. But no, you're going to be so disappointed with your initial draft.
When we've already said that this is probably a season that where you really can be more justified than usual playing the early wild card because there are so many new managers and it's very unclear who the stars are going to be on those new squads.
So I guess it's maybe a new way of thinking in that the early wild card is less a product of your team and more a product of your planning. So we've just accepted that that's a thing.
Yeah. I'm planning. I may have 3 Man City players and 3 Man U players on my team to start the season anyway, despite not knowing what I'm going to be getting.
Right. Okay. Where's our next question coming from, Josh?
Next question comes from Tapin Design at Tapin Design at Tapin Design. It says, curious to hear about the most effective strategies for bench boost / outlet attack / triple captain.
Oh, man. I mean, these chips are so confounding that we couldn't even fit them into our 10 bullet points. I mean, everyone spent a lot of time talking about these chips last season, mostly because it was the first time we had the opportunity to play them. It's still sort of uncertain what we learned from last season. Like, a lot of the strategy ended up working. A lot of it seemed like it needed to be tweaked. Should we be playing triple captain bench boost earlier in the season? Should we all, like last year, we all played these chips at the exact same time, talking about groupthink.
Right.
Is there something to be said about playing them sort of out of turn?
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, it's kind of a punt on the question, but I think that it's a little early to have a strategy for those. We all know that, you know, scientists have proven that the outlet attack, there is no effective way to play the outlet attack. Yeah. I think the bench boost and the triple captain. I mean, the triple captain, I think most of us actually played right last year. Yeah. I mean, whether you most of us waited until the double game week and we triple captained either Alexis Sanchez or Sergio Aguero, and they both exploded for a ton of points and it worked out fantastically well.
Yeah,
I don't know if it'll work out that well in every season.
Yeah, or a lot of people actually played their bench boost the week that we played our triple captain, and I think
it worked out almost equally as well. Yeah.
So I mean, the simple rule of thumb, Tapin, is save at least the triple captain and bench boost for a prominent double game.
Yes. The one thing I will say, and if we're including wild cards as chips, which the winner wild card,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's not even a winner wild card anymore, right? Because you can use it at any point in the second half of the season. I would have used my wild card a lot earlier than I did. I think last year I waited almost until the last minute to use the wild card. And I would have played the wild card 4 or 5 weeks sooner because I was trying to catch up on points. And I sort of bought into this groupthink idea. But I could have made up a lot of points by wild carding earlier and just taking the risk that there might be some injuries.
Right. All right. Eden Hazard. Wow. The one and only number 10 plays for Chelsea at FPL _Chelsea. He asks, what's the best formation to use this year? So I'll tell you this. Right now, I am set up as a 4-3-3.
Interesting.
Yeah. So think about
that. You think you're going to keep that?
I really doubt it. I think what that basically tells you is my team is a little messed up right now.
It's hard to know this early in the season. Keepers. The strikers are priced about where we expected them to be. There seems to be a bit of a gap right now between the cheap strikers and there's kind of no middle class with strikers. There's you know, a whole bunch of strikers that are 6.5 million or cheaper. And then you kind of have to go up to Lukaku at 9 million to find another striker you'd really want.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are no strikers in the 6.5 to 9 million range that I'm really any more inclined to pick up than I am in the 6.5 guys.
Right.
Yeah, I think in the end you're going to end up going with a you know, 3-4-3. It's almost always the best strategy, especially if you can find a third striker who can consistently score.
Yeah,
there's almost always somebody there.
Something I'd like to be better at, I think all of us should be better at, and maybe 4-3-3 is just unimpeachable, but we should all be a little more open to being flexible with our formation.
Sure.
Week to week. I think you get stuck in this mode of it's 3-4-3, 3-4-3. Why don't you start two goalkeepers one week? Why not? All right, so the last...
I wish you could do that. I guess you can if you bench boost.
Yeah, bench boost. All right, last section, Josh. We're going to have a little chat about team names real quick because we did get some responses on social before we recorded about a lot of talk that came out of our Great British Bake-Off discussion.
My wife was very annoyed that I included a few Great British Bake-Off names without crediting her properly on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm impressed that your wife even listens to this podcast.
No, it was actually, I was on the Twitter feed, excuse me, not on the podcast. But she came up with Swan Sea Biscuit, which that was pretty good, and liver pudding.
Sure.
And,
would Swan Sea Biscuit be a reference to a horse? Is that like a horse pie?
She recommended you don't think about it too deeply.
So the one I thought about, I didn't actually send it out on Twitter, was Arsenic Buns. Which actually, arsenal buns.
It's a bit complicated, I think. Yeah.
Don't eat them. They have poison in them.
We also said, what's the best FPL team name you've seen so far? I thought Andy Lakeman in the Hail Shooter Super League. I thought his Nolito Shop of Horrors was the best
so far. That's good.
And then Dave Wagner Lodahl had said, I think I said this at the top of the podcast, he's enjoying A Team Has No Name.
That's a good Game of Thrones reference there.
Yeah, and then An Inconvenient Hooth.
And the last question about team names comes from Chris at Since Barnes. He's our friend over at the Across the Pond podcast. He says, what are some FPL team names to avoid? And what are going to be the most common names? So I think, Josh, this is a question we can open up to our listeners. Send us a note on our Facebook page or Twitter. We'll run through all those handles when we close up shop here at the end of the episode. But what are we meant to avoid? What do you think are going to be the most common player names punned on? I mean, Christian Fuchs last season was a classic.
Right. Every third team was a Fuchs pun.
Our friend Tim Shaw over at Soccer Captains was telling me on Twitter today that he thinks the player pun names are passé now. He wants it to be all double entendres and euphemisms. I almost was tempted to send him my idea, donkey punching. I'm not sure how that one will play with the kids at home.
You have to cut that from the episode. So let's open it up. Let us know what the best team names you've seen so far, or if that team name is your team name, then share that with us too. Brandon, I think that's it. I don't know about you, but it's 108 degrees in this apartment. I am exhausted.
Yeah, let's get out of here. So you can stay in touch with us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters. Facebook, we're facebook.com/alwayscheating. Send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com, or for the love of God, just Google us.
Easy to find us. You can also join the Hail Cheater Super League. You can do it on the website. There's the league code is on Facebook and on Twitter. Very easy to do. You click a button and you've joined. So please do that. And we'll be doing weekly updates on the league all throughout the year.
Fantastic. And for more podcasts from Always Cheating, subscribe on iTunes. Please leave us a review if you'd be so kind. See us on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. Josh, will I see you next week?
You will.
Or maybe I'll just Skype with you.
Probably Skype.
Okay.
Yeah, this once was enough.
All right. Hail Cheaters.
Hail Cheaters. Praise Mabakani.